From the land to Grand Hyatt Diversity in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 25th day of March, 2022. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo of GlobalComResearch.com. We'll hear about the proposed Saline River Farms packing facility in deep southern Illinois, and we'll take a look at the weather forecast, too. That with Eric Snodgrass from Nutrien Ag Solutions on this Friday edition of the closing market report from Illinois Public Media. May corn settled at $7.54 today. That was up 5 3/4. December, a penny and a half higher at $6.69. November beans up 3 3/4 at $14.96. And the wheat futures finished the July harvest at $10.92.5, up 18 cents. Mike Zuzulo, GlobalComResearch.com, out of Atchison, Kansas, now joins us to discuss what happened in the marketplace for this Friday. Happy Friday to you, Michael.
You too. Happy pre-USDA acreage intentions and stocks report day.
Yeah, well, those prospective numbers are due out next week on Thursday at 11 a.m. You want to fill me on what you're thinking about them?
Yeah, you know, for me, Todd, it seems like the grain stocks report, in my opinion, have always had more of a trend bias for prices. They help dictate more the spread price action, the available supplies heading into planting and the new crop. And it just seems to me that because of those numbers, they will either be tighter than the trade thinks, and therefore the weather heading into planting and especially during reproductive phase is going to be a lot more important. And I would ratchet it up by a factor of 10 probably this year because of Ukraine, even though Friday Ukraine did say they were going to let go and reduce the demand of having an export license for corn and vegetable oil. So that's another story. But I think this is where, to me, the grain stocks number for corn seems a bit high because we're really on pace with last year's terrific volume sales year on the export market for corn. So that's probably the number one thing I'll be looking at is what the corn stocks actually are, and then see how the July Dease corn spread acts because it's in a wedge formation hanging around there around plus 50, plus 60, well off of its highs, but also, you know, not a negative number, not near a carrying charge either. So that's probably going to be the big thing for me is the corn stocks number. And then, yes, the acreage numbers are going to be super important, especially for new crop. But I feel like there's a lot more wiggle room this year, that those numbers are fungible and could change quite a bit between now and May.
Yeah, these quarterly stocks numbers always come with some important caveats that come along with them. This one's the prospective plantings report in June. It's the June acreage report. The last one is in September, and that one is by itself, but it's the last one of the year, kind of sets the tone for the coming 3 months. And then, of course, you've got the December 1, which comes out in January with all of the reports from USDA, and they set the tone, kind of the direction, for about 3 months usually as we go through whatever period comes after them. This time around, it'll be the planting season. Farmers sometimes watch the planting season for direction, and the trade sometimes gets worried about whether the crop will get in. I'm wondering how much stock you put into that, other than it's a good way to day trade.
This year, I put more in than normal, and that goes directly to the beef house meeting that you and U of I just sponsored and were the major part of. And again, a really phenomenal job this year. So nice to be back together in person. But my mindset this year is kind of directly related to the people I sat with at lunch there in Covington. And when we were going through the tables of input costs and variable costs that U of I was going through, it just seemed like the diesel fuel costs and the chemical costs were going to be much, much higher potentially. And therefore, I think farmers were wondering whether Mother Nature was going to cooperate. In other words, in the Western Corn Belt, it's so dry, especially as you get into Texas and Oklahoma. And that's not the primary Corn Belt, but even as you get up into Nebraska, and even in irrigated country, those farmers are very worried about it being too dry for the corn to germinate. They think it's going to be able to germinate, but they're still very nervous about it. And so it really matters more, I think, whether they're going to be able to justify spending the money on the diesel and the fuel to produce more corn and the chemicals to produce more corn. And then by the same token, on the east side of the Corn Belt, east of the Mississippi, what I picked up in the Covington meeting and what I've picked up all the way pretty much to, I would guess, the Illinois River, is that it's going to be maybe too cold and wet, and it's going to be a little bit more frustrating for the corn planters to roll smoothly and get good emergence. And there again, will that dictate some swapping of some spare acres? So it's probably not going to be big numbers, but it's going to be sizable enough that I see 92 million as a really tough number to get to. 93.5 is the high on the Bloomberg estimates. That seems really super high to me.
So as you're explaining this, I was thinking about the two delays you're considering early in the spring, maybe not getting in as fast, and high input prices causing producers to worry, especially if there are concerns as relates to germination. And then on the back end, swapping out for soybean rather than corn or some other crop, if they can, that is, because the high diesel input price and other input prices might not make it worth putting this crop in. Could be on both ends, but I would think the back end, if there's a really big delay, that could be an issue for acreage.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's where, you know, I'm leaning towards the idea that the soybeans have a bigger premium contingent upon how bad is the Brazilian crop. You know, if we're at 124, 125 on Brazil bean production, and then we have some planting delays anywhere in the corn bean belt, primary corn bean belt, then it makes it a lot more difficult to justify $15 new crop beans. And so I think the other thing I would throw out there is the acreage number means a lot less to me this year because the yield number means so much more. And that goes directly back to what you're talking about, those input costs. And it seems to me that a near 181 national yield in corn is very, very high. Very, very high watermark to be able to make this year, whereas that 51, 52 bushel yield in soybeans doesn't seem as difficult. Although I am hearing some people in Illinois and in Missouri talking about still having difficulty potentially getting the necessary chemicals and fungicide that would even, you know, disrupt maybe some bean planting. So it's wide open right now, and I think that's where I'm going to trust the spreads and the grain stocks report probably a bit more.
Hey, thank you.
You bet. Have a great weekend.
You too. That's Mike Zuzulo. He's with GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. Wednesday evening of this week, beef cattle producers from southern Illinois gathered at the Dixon Springs Agricultural Research Center that belongs to the University of Illinois to hear from Teresa Steckler, Extension Beef Specialist, about some of the production issues they're facing right now, and also to be updated on the proposed Saline River Farms packing plant that would process both beef cattle and hogs in the area. Brent Clark is one of the four owners of the proposed plant, which would be near Creel Springs to the south and west of Marion, Illinois. He and one of his partners, Jeff Diedrich, made a presentation about the plant. I asked Brent after the meeting to explain how long the plant had been in the planning process.
We started in about March of 2020, discussing the need in the marketplace and the region for meat processing, protein processing, and the pandemic set in soon thereafter, and it sort of highlighted the need for processing, more processing in our area. And so that was kind of the starting point.
How did you highlight it? What do you mean?
Well, when you're a producer, there were no slots, no time availabilities to have your animals processed at local processors, because we're in a part of the state, we're in a region of the country that is very limited on the amount of processing that is available for both cattle and hogs. And so when the pandemic hit, we were already tight in those processing plants, and then it was like people panicked and just filled them up. And we are at a point now, even today, that it takes still about a year to have something, a year out to get an appointment to get something processed.
We're in deep southern Illinois. How many states do you expect to serve this plant?
I think it's going to be about 7 states will come with product, livestock, to our plant. Illinois, Indiana, Kentucky, Tennessee, Mississippi, Arkansas, and Missouri.
What will be the processing capacity of the plant?
We're going to start out with our first line, and it'll handle 2,800 beef a month and 5,600 hogs a month. That's the first line. The second line basically doubles that capacity. and we'll turn that on once we get rolling.
Why were you at Dixon Springs tonight?
Well, Dixon Springs is like home plate for us. I mean, it's the Southern Illinois local producers, and that's where we're at. We're located in Williamson County, which is in deep Southern Illinois. And this would be home plate to start out with these producers getting the first crack at this opportunity.
Again, that was Brent Clark. He's one of the owners of the proposed Saline River Farms processing plant that would be located in Creel Springs, Illinois. That's in the deep southern part of the state. Jeff Beasley is a cattle producer actually from Creel Springs, and he was at the meeting on Wednesday evening. He's also a past president of the Illinois Beef Association. He's not completely convinced this packing plant can compete. I asked him why.
Well, because I've sold enough cattle over the years, followed the industry long enough, that I know that the four big packers, plus all the small, medium-sized packers, they're competing for X number of cattle. So these guys are just going to step into that fray, and they're not going to just be able to go out and cherry-pick the cattle they want. They're going to have to get competitive, and my question was, how are you going to be able to match the Tysons, the JBS, et cetera, to buy those cattle and procure those cattle that you need? So I just thought that was a valid question to ask those guys if that's something they've really thought about.
We had that question tonight, and it was an interesting moment because I stepped back to really think about the question when it was asked. And my initial reaction is, well, we're going to be here, we're close by. But you know what it really comes down to is we have to deliver as a company as well.
That's Jeff Diedrich. He's one of the four partners in the proposed Saline River Farms packing plant facility.
Yes, proximity is going to be extremely important, but the quality of product that we bring to the table will be very important. The ease of doing business as a company for the local producer, the wholesale customers, the retail customers, and so forth will be paramount. But it's really going to come down to the cost effectiveness and the quality of product that we put out, and we're committed to see that through.
Jeff Diedrich, Brent Clark, and two others are working feverishly to put the Saline River Farms packing plant facility together. They have grants in place and are waiting on permitting. They told the beef cattle producers that gathered at the Dixon Springs Agricultural Center Wednesday night that the plant could be up and running within about 18 months after construction starts. That's about the same amount of time that it will take producers to ramp up cattle production in the area to feed the plant. Let's check in on this Friday with Eric Snodgrass. He's at Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agrible. Hi, Eric. Thanks for being with us. Let's start by recapping the weather we've had in the past week, please.
Yeah, sure. So, you know, going into this past week, I just have a picture in the back of my mind of the drought monitor. And we have, of course, the extensive drought that's in the West, and it's been getting worse in the West. But we also had some drought still on the monitor from eastern Texas all the way over to South Carolina. We just wiped that out. So that's an area that in the last week, some places down there in the lower Mississippi River Valley grabbed over 6 inches of rainfall. We had a bunch of rainfall here, of course, and the upper level low that came over to make all this happen. You look outside today, still see clouds. That's from the same system, and we just can't seem to shake this one. It's still trying to get out. And behind it, we've got some really strong winds, so we're going to deal with that over the weekend. So yeah, there's my pick-me-up for everybody listening today. But we did get quite a bit of rain out of it, and that's good overall for the longer-term picture. But as we all know, quite a bit of severe weather all the way from eastern Texas to the East Coast behind this one. Now, you know, who didn't get it? Well, the Northwest Plains didn't get it. Western Texas didn't get it. And now today we have red flag warnings and high wind warnings for places in Nebraska, South Dakota, North Dakota. And then we have the wind advisories that stretch all the way here into Illinois. So it goes to show you how these systems, while they may come through and appear to really do some corrective action on some of the bigger problems, we just realized how big of a country we've got, and there are some places that missed out, even on a storm system of the size and scale of the one we just had.
Speaking of bigger problems and corrective actions, I haven't asked anybody about California for some time. How are things there?
Well, they're getting to the point where it's now or never with precipitation. So the mountains right now are at 50% of normal snowpack, and that's not good. That's where the majority of the water would be right now that they're going to use for the rest of the year. The Klamath Mountains, that's the northern part of the Sierra Range that kind of curls around the northern part of California, just south of Oregon. There's almost no snow in those mountains at this point, and usually they're completely packed full. So the reservoirs like Lake Oroville, Lake Shasta, those are the two biggest in northern California that really supply a lot of the water for agriculture across the state. You know, they're currently looking at being somewhere between about 38 and 48% of full pool. So that means without snow in the mountains like they want, and then without those reservoirs already having had some good recharge, this is going to be a rough year for California. And then we get to add this statistic to it. The state of California and southern Oregon, Nevada, and then western Arizona. So that whole area is having its driest start to any year since 1893. So California is going to go right back to the front of our, you know, of our discussion. And what I always tell folks is just remember, California leads the nation in the production of over 40 different fruits and vegetables and milk, which means when weather in California is like this bad, we tend to see it in the grocery stores right away. So here's the thing. California's got some rain coming. And they're excited about it, but it's, I mean, not to use a tired, you know, axiom or whatever you call this, but it's just a drop in the bucket of what they need, but some's coming through. And then that's going to eventually, probably next week, form into another low that's going to hit the Central Plains. That's going to run right across the state of Illinois. So we're going to be looking next week at another big winter storm, actually spring storm system, like the one we just dealt with. And that means another 3-day severe weather outbreak, probably to our south. So they got a system coming through, but it's just one. They needed to have about 20 of these. No joke. That's the number, about 20 of these throughout winter. And so far they've had almost none except for this one coming through.
Wow. What do you see, by the way, for springtime here in the United States?
Well, I right now, based upon latest information I've got, I'd say that we aren't going to see drought being beat back too far in the northern plains. So I'm talking about Montana to the western Dakotas. Parts of Nebraska. It's looking better in the Central Plains, getting into Oklahoma and Kansas, you know, even over to Missouri and Iowa. Where it's not going to improve, I don't think, is down into Texas and western Texas and Colorado. That's going to be an area that there are places where it's still going to stay dry. I think we're looking here at Illinois at some tighter windows. And unfortunately, I don't really want to have to say this, but I don't have a whole lot of evidence that April is going to break away and go warm anytime in the first part of April, the beginning of it. I think we're going to see some more cooler days than warmer days. Now, we remember here in Illinois, you know, well, right where you and I are, Todd, our last frost date is on average April 17th. And we'd really like to, of course, get that crop in the ground as fast as possible. But if we don't start seeing these soil temperatures just break away and consistently staying above 50, then we're going to have to just be patient. We know how this works in Illinois, of course, but it's just one of those things where right now I'm not getting the strong signals that April is going to give us what we want until maybe we get past the second week of April.
What are conditions like for safrinha corn in South America?
Yeah, well, it's kind of funny. We call that the safrinha crop, which means little crop, but it's not little anymore, is it? It's 3.1 billion bushels of corn. And that second crop, you know, went in fast. They got the first crop out, second crop in. It's been a little drier in the north on about 70% of that crop. But it's the same thing as us being dry in like June on our crop. So it's not really a problem. And as they're now going into a critical time period, it seems as though better moisture is returning. I guess what I would say about it is everybody's baked into the market something like 112 million metric ton on that crop. I don't have a reason to say that I am going to think that it's going to be much bigger than that. But I also don't have a reason to tell you that the weather is going to cause it to be smaller than that either. I think it's just they're going to kind of ride along and get what they get, and not going to be a major news story unless something shows up, you know, in May that really hits it during grain fill. At this point, it looks like it's going to be about the size they think it's going to be.
It's normal until it changes. That's what Dale Goodall has told me. Hey, thank you. You have a great weekend, by the way.
I'll do that. I'm just going to try to, maybe I might go out and fly a kite in the cloudy weather here. But other than that, I think I might just chill out and wait for warmer days.
And that's Eric Snodgrass. He is with Nutrien Ag Solutions and AgriBolt. Joined us on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media.